listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
First up, it's Tala Voss. Good morning, Tala.
Good morning, Rodney. It's really cool to be here with you.
Well, I read online that you've had 30 years teaching experience.
Actually, yes. 30 years, 28 years in the classroom, and then I continued in education ever since I was 20, actually.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I get people can be deceptive because I won't say any more because I have Tala on Zoom. Tell us about your name, Tala Voss. It's so cool.
Well, I gave myself my name when I was 3 years old, and my given name is Natana Ella. But when people tried to call me by my real name, I refused. I says, no, my name is Tala. And so I'm Tala.
Tala. But your surname has always been Voss.
Yeah.
And where's Voss come from?
From my parents are Dutch.
Dutch.
It's a means Dutch. Fox. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm. Now, we're going to take our time here because we're going to get to your community hub, but I want to understand what's happening in teaching because you've had 28 years in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Is it getting better?
No. No.
Why not?
It's a big subject, Rodney. Because the children are so disenfranchised from themselves and there's so much happening in the school environment that becomes very disconnected from the human spirit and the children's empowerment and their authenticity. So that's where we come in.
But if you go back 28 years or 30 years when you started at age 20, it was better then?
I think it's less clogged. It's really become so clogged with so many things that has to be taught, so the simplicity is not there. And I think it becomes a lot more confusing for the children in today's climate, and it's really fast-paced. So I think there's so many different ways of looking at it, Rodney, but in my experience, we had such clarity in how we taught the basics, and there was very little confusion around that. So the children got up running in their writing and their understanding of math. So that's one aspect, yeah. Particularly in the school where I worked in with structured literacy and maths and so forth. Today in the classroom, I suppose we've gone through a transition as well with a lot of open spaces, and that was another layer of difficulty for our students to be able to cope with information coming in and engaging with that information that the teacher was, you know, delivering. So that's another aspect. When I worked in the open spaces, and I'm not going against open spaces, but we needed a combination of both. I had children putting up boxes and little hovels inside the classroom, and I'd look down into there and say, what are you doing down there? And they say, well, I just need some private space. I can't be in these big open spaces. So that's another level. What we're seeing now is a move back to spaces where it's not so noisy and it's not so loud and it's not so confusing. So they're just some of the aspects that
Has the philosophy of teaching changed over those 30 years?
I think, let me just say, I think the New Zealand curriculum is a really, really good document. I don't think it's ever reached its full potential, because it's so hard to move a curriculum like that in its full intention. I fortunately had the ability to do that and brought in a lot of letting the kids explore their own journeys and learning, and then using the curriculum as a tool to express those ideas.
Yes.
So that's the direction I go today.
And have the kids changed in those 30 years? Have you noticed?
Yes.
Or kids. The kids have changed.
I think there's a lot more clogging up their brains with the material that they access today. So their connection with the education system and what they're experiencing in real life, it doesn't match so well. So they haven't got the engagement as much as they would perhaps in the early years where I was teaching. There's quite a big gap between what they see online and having the ability to explore things perhaps that were more interest to them, and then coming into a classroom situation where they're just really quite bored. And I'm not in the classroom at the moment, but it wasn't that long ago I was doing some relief work, and I'm working with these large groups of kids in open spaces, and they're doing reading. And I said to them, I feel like I'm being a policewoman here in this space, because I'm telling you always to be quiet and doing this. You should be doing that. You should be doing that. I'm not running the class as such because I'm just relieving. And then I sit down with a group of boys, and they have been completely disruptive all the time. So I go to them and I go, wow, you know, what are we going to do here? What are you doing? And there's this, we're reading, and we have to answer all these questions based on this book. And I says, well, if you had the choice to read the book that you wanted, what would it be? And at that point, the whole atmosphere changed on this table, because they were sharing what they wanted to read and what they wanted to engage with. And it just really proved to me again that our children are quite disengaged with a lot of the material.
Mm.
And it means, and they're not bad kids. Once you actually get to understand them and hear their heart and what they're interested in and what really makes their wheels turn, you get a completely different child in front of you. And
I go along to primary school events. I've got kids at primary school. And the thing that I notice, and it's hard to always remember, you know, without being rose-tinted glasses, but what I notice about the kids these days is no one sits still and everyone's making a noise. Now, to be fair, when I go along, there's some event on, if you know what I mean. That could be a school assembly. But I went along and the teachers couldn't get the kids to sit down and shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, when I was at school, if you got told to sit down and shut up, it was you sat down and you shut up. You know what I mean?
I do. I know what you mean.
And I think, gosh, it must be so tiring to have to deal with this.
I would say, yep, it is. It's really, really difficult.
So,
yep.
You've got this. Well, tell us what you've got, a hybrid learning community hub. I have no idea what a hybrid learning community hub could possibly be.
Okay.
Tell me.
Yeah, so the hybrid idea is really that we're not isolated, siloed education systems that leverage a way of learning that is so typical in different schools. We're open to homeschoolers coming into a space where they can explore their curiosities, where they can engage with the curriculum in a way that has meaning and connection with them. So we open up the opportunities for children to follow their curiosity, and then we wrap the curriculum around that. So in effect, we follow the child's strengths and their curiosities, but we provide a really strong, reliable framework to allow robust outcomes from that. And we also do critical thinking. We wrap that around their learning as well. And we have this really amazing, beautiful inquiry model that was designed specifically for this environment where children can engage in any topic, providing it's, you know, within moral boundaries, but they can explore their personal interests without losing the robustness to required to communicate really sound thinking. So the Learning Hub serves as a place where they can come and engage with us. We are learning coaches. We don't call ourselves teachers, even though we may have a teaching background. We are trained in listening to the students and then supporting them through our inquiry model, supporting them through the critical thinking, and supporting them through the New Zealand curriculum as a fit for purpose journey.
So the student, what years do you cover?
At the moment, we are focusing probably more year 5 to, we can go all the way to 13, and we also, in terms of the critical thinking, we do work with adults as well. So
okay. So a student could be at school.
Yeah.
They could be homeschooled.
Mm-hmm.
And they join the community hub.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's assume that I'll take my son. What's he? I never know those years. He's 10. What year would he be?
He's in year 5 or 6.
So would you take a year 5 or 6, or does I need to go to 100%. My daughter? Okay.
No, 100%.
So he's a bit of a misfit at school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little shocked that he's not making more progress.
Mm-hmm.
I get the sense that he's not that enthused about school.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me. So I'm looking around thinking what to do with my son, right? Because he's a happy-go-lucky boy.
Yeah.
And he's curious.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm talking to you now and saying, can you help me?
Yep. I can help your son because, first of all, I want you to, the values of our, what we do is authenticity, empowerment, and the human spirit. That's what we want to nurture and retain. And I'm just going to go back a little bit. When you, we'll answer your question about your son. I just always think about when we're born into this world, we have this incredible power in us to learn things, whether it's learning to walk and to explore things. And it's such a powerful force that can continue in our lives as human beings, yeah? And often, and schools can do this, they can shut that down to a degree because it's always dependent on the teacher driving the information. We used to plan lessons for an entire class and they would become disengaged. So what we do is we start from the base is, who are you? We're not going to pressure that child to perform to my standards or my expectations. I'm here to support them to understand who they are as a human being. And it depends on what stage they're at, but we want them to start communicating who they are and what they enjoy doing. So I don't know, what does your son enjoy doing? What's the sort of thing he enjoys?
Computer games.
Yeah. What sort of computer games?
The most basic ones, because I stop him all the time.
It's a challenge. It's a big challenge.
And if he had his way, he would play computer games, I think, morning and night. And then every now and then he'd jump up and hop on his bike and go tearing around the house to burn off some energy and then back to his computer game.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't happen. because I don't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we take him along and he does a lot of activities. And so he does, he enjoys sport. And, but when you ask him what he would like to do, it would be stay yep. home and play computer games.
Yeah. I'm, that sounds like a typical situation. I've got two boys and they're 9 and they love their games and they love Minecraft. And I had to come to a place with that where I let them play Minecraft and I realized there's actually a lot in Minecraft that they learn and that they can engage with. And it's not as terrifying as I thought it would be as a parent.
Minecraft, yeah.
Yeah, so I do let them explore that and I do let them time on that. And then we do have conversations around that. And interestingly, some technology actually has the ability to expand our children's minds. And we end up branching out into conversations that are not related directly to the game, but to the concepts and the ideas within the game. And that could be something that translates into stories, translates into ideas that they start creating from that. And I think if we look at education as a network rather than a isolated little silos of ideas, and that's our job as learning coaches. And so we have those conversations and I don't stop them from having those conversations, but I lead them into expansion of those ideas into other places that could fit easily into the New Zealand curriculum if you chose to. And another thing as well is in that situation, if I had your son, we would have these conversations about the games they do, but then we would possibly bring in our critical thinking course. So we, with some, particularly the younger children, we start delving into questioning. So we're able to question or bring up questions around what they're interested in. And you'll be surprised, actually, they end up expanding out into other areas that are very organic and interesting and have a place in the curriculum.
And how would you interact with my son? Would that be online over Zoom?
Yeah, that's a good question. We have right now, I'm sitting in our learning hub, and so it's a physical space that we're building up, and we have children coming in here doing literacy. And we have different groups coming in here. Can I just reflect on the point that your child or your son, he likes games, but what's really fascinating, the work that I do with the children, they come into our room and they are very, I'm quite strict, right, but I'm also very flexible. So when they come into this room, they know they're here to learn and they've got these restraints around them, but with these restraints of behavior comes really amazing material that they can engage with. So they learn a whole bunch of things in these physical spaces. And they love the engagement with a group of kids, whether it's literacy, whether it's inquiry, whether it's social sciences or a whole, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. My job as a learning coach is to use what they have and then expand it out. Now, with your son and answering your question, we would invite your son to be part of the groups that we currently have here. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I say, okay, we're doing an inquiry. We want you to join our group. And we've got some kids doing an inquiry on games. We've got some kids doing inquiry on environmental issues. We've got kids doing a whole bunch of different things. And then we sit and we have conversations about what they're learning and we expand their knowledge and understanding in the group setting, but also with our critical thinking course.
Okay.
So
that class would be outside of school time?
At the moment, I work during school and out of school time. I can do both, but at the moment I choose to be during school time because we are reaching out to schools and we're saying, hey, you know, what are your kids learning at school? We can take that and we can expand it out with our critical thinking course. We have robust conversations around what they're learning. And what also happens, because kids could be learning different things, they're learning different things at the same time because there's such a diversity around
so
that.
They can go from the classroom with a dispensation from the school because they're going to learn in your group and then go back to the classroom. So it's part of the school.
That's the learning hub, yeah.
And where are you based?
We are at the old Avonside School, the girls' Avonside School, which is now the Climate Action Campus in Christchurch. Okay. In Christchurch, yeah.
Where does the times table come? And long division.
Oh, you're talking about, okay, I was thinking timetables and the work that I do. Times tables and division?
Long division.
Long division. Good on you, Rodney. I think these things are really important. I do it with my own children. I homeschool my kids, and we do all of that. And like, for me personally, I just think there are things that everybody should know. And the times table should be just a rote thing that kids do. And I see it like it's like putting fuel in a car and it makes it run. You don't have to think how the wheels turn.
I could kiss you. Because it's so troubling to me, this basic numeracy that doesn't seem, to my observation, it's all about child-centered learning and sitting down. I've had to do that with my kids, if you know what I mean.
It's interesting the point that you raise, because I, particularly in the work that I do, because we allow children to follow their curiosity, but it's not without robust disciplines in the curriculum areas, but also discipline in the workspaces that they have.
Yes.
So if you're not, I'm just speaking this is the way I've always taught. If you're going to be disruptive and you're not wanting to be part of this opportunity, well, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place.
Yeah.
We can work with you, we can support you, and we will get you to a place where you're really happy and you're feeling like you're progressing and you're making progress in your personal areas. But also, like I said, times tables or learning how to read and write, I think we've done a really big disservice to our children by not having structured literacy, and it should happen in the very first years. I taught structured literacy for 15 years in the school where I worked. I had never had a child leave my class not being able to read and write and function as an adult in society. And that was because I caught them early. I did an amazing program, which incidentally we've created a New Zealand version. That is a 15-week course, and they learn how to do the alphabet. Continuing beyond the 15 weeks, by the end of the year, they're able to read and write enough to get them started, and there's nothing to be guessed and how these things work. And I think that was the key. I had extraordinary writers because of the foundation that they had. We've created a New Zealand version that's really, it's almost done, but it works on, storytelling, dance, art, movement, but it has really, and New Zealand history, by the way, but it has really strong structures where the kids will learn to read and write really, really well. So I'm mentioning this because even though we work with curiosity and interests and so forth, we also provide the structures to be successful. And our job as learning coaches is to get the most sound outcomes for our students.
My kids went for a while when it was open to a Mind Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Mind Plus?
I couldn't describe it to you, but I have heard it.
Well, it's a similar thing, supposedly for gifted kids. But they would drop out one day a week and go into this community hub. And they enjoyed that immensely because it sort of broke up and they worked with different kids. It was a similar thing. Do you see your role expanding to be a full school?
Yes. I would love to have... Can you imagine our libraries? You know, in Christchurch, they've done an incredible work in our libraries. So if you can imagine similar spaces, but you've got rooms where we have a specialist in science, a specialist in literacy, a specialist in philosophy, you get specialists coming into these spaces where children can book their lessons so that children get the highest value out of these specialists to take them to where they can go. Because often in our schools, and I know for myself, I had to be a specialist in writing, I had to be a specialist in this and this and this and everything else, and I couldn't do it. But imagine if in our learning hub, children could access and book in these specialists to support them in things that they are currently exploring and interested in.
You have a sense, don't you, that technology is, we're sort of on the edge of technology dramatically changing schooling, you know, with opportunities of bringing in teachers, AI, online resources where you can look anything up, where you can visit any place. And yet we want them also to have this real world experience where they touch and feel things and learn the basics. But sitting around that is this extraordinarily technological window, which we can't begin to imagine.
We can't begin to imagine. And I think that's where what really inspired my critical thinking course is that our children already are accessing information that goes way beyond the walls of a classroom.
Yes.
So how can we help them deal with the complexity of all this information? And that's where the critical thinking course came in, because we want that it's now more about not what they're learning but how they think about their learning. Because there is like learning with clicks and bytes, or going cognitively into these areas that they're going and thinking about it more broadly. And I think we really need to do that for our kids, because they're entering a world that we as educators are not going to be able to control.
I have that. I have a funny one like that with my 13-year-old who's just with her friends got into music. And we were just reflecting with Paul before we went on air that when we were kids and got into music, you'd have your little transistor radio and you'd wait to that magic time of the week and you'd listen to Casey Kasem with the top 40 hits from coast to coast before you were born. And that was it. That was your top 40. And tonight I'm driving my 13-year-old and her friends across to an activity they do an hour away, and they listen to music in the car, and they have the magic of Spotify.
Yep.
And they know all the 60s music, the 70s music, the 80s music, the 90s music. They know literally 60 years of music. If you say to them, oh, there's a great, which one do you want from Roy Orbison? I'll play it. They know the music.
Yeah.
Because it's there at the end. Now, that's a small example. But you're thinking, man, I can't imagine when I was 13, 14, 15, being able to dial up any song.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you want to watch, if you want to know long division, you can dial it up and have a person who's thought long and hard about it literally on a piece of paper on your screen, explain it. And you're thinking, wow. Now, this is a plus and a minus, right? But it's a huge opportunity, and we don't begin to know how to realize this with our kids. And, of course, our kids are doing this.
Yeah. So I don't have the answer for everything, Rodney.
No, of course I don't. It's just so fun to explore. Now, here's another example. God knows why. My daughter decided she'd learn Morse code.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
Well, I don't begin to know how you'd learn Morse code. But, of course, she Googled it, and there's Menomics, and she learned the Morse code relatively quickly off by heart with this memory thing that they use. Then there were online courses for free where they'd do it at different speeds, and she's trying to write down the letters as it's going. And then it goes faster and she knows the speed she's doing, and then they're trying to pass messages. And she's just sitting there for fun learning something as obscure as Morse code, which was never available to us to learn that way.
Right. So you just tapped into the power of her curiosity, right?
Yes.
And then she learned something that we probably wouldn't even think about as educators, but she drove her own learning in that instant.
Yes.
And I think we underestimate the power of our children to create for themselves. And I think also that in the school system, we stop them thinking for themselves, because what other option do they have? Because we're telling them what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, and what the outcome's going to be. But imagine, like you just described with your daughter, she engaged in something that she was interested in, and she did some really good learning there. Yes. And it was within herself. And
so you have to do that in a way that has all the curiosity while at the same time getting across the basics.
Yeah.
Literacy, numeracy, writing legibly, writing well, all of that at the same time, which is so they don't descend into this vortex of games. You know what I mean? They got to, I can't imagine my 10-year-old learning Morse code. He'd just be sitting on the computer playing games. He would play the most mind-numbing game. Apparently they switched the computer off at school, and there's some game that you can play when you're not connected to the internet that is tragic. And he could happily play that, because I think he does it so that it avoids social interaction. So it's a very, very fraught business of keeping that curiosity going.
Well, I have twin boys who are 9. I do allow them access to devices, but what I'm discovering, Rodney, is you do have to put restraints. I have to put restraints on my kids, and then they have this little blank moment or this blank space where nothing comes out of their brain, but they haven't got another option but to engage their brain in something. Yes. And then they go and find that something.
Yes.
And when they start finding that something, they've got that energy pull away from the devices, and they actually start creating some pretty amazing stuff, and their conversations start getting engaged, and they start engaging their body, and bingo, they're out of that terrible pull of devices. But I have to manage that as a mother, and I have to manage that as an educator, and I think that's our challenge for today's world. I think there's definitely a place for us to create that structure, to create the boundaries, give them space just to go, I don't know, I'm not interested in anything. That's fine too, but eventually they'll find something.
Yeah. And so what you're doing, if your ideal student now, how much would you see them in a week in your hub?
At the moment, I do 3 sessions a week in literacy. However, what we are looking at and reaching out now to schools and saying, look, let us come into your school. Let us work with your children on work that they're currently doing, and we will have conversations around that and expand critical thinking. So we're helping them to think beyond just the subject, because that's driven by the conversations that we have. So that I would do once a week in the classroom. Or I invite them to come here to the Learning Hub and work with us here. Can I just say one thing, Rodney? What's really interesting, when you start these conversations with the children, I'm always amazed at, once we open up conversations around the table, where it goes with our children and what's going on inside of their minds and what they're interested in. And I'll share you a little story. When I'm in the classroom, every morning for half an hour, I would steal time from the program, and all they would do is ask questions. And the questions would just fire in all sorts of directions, and we would cover the most amazing subjects and ideas, and there'd be laughter, and there'd be just delight, and there would be just such an incredible energy in the space. I felt guilty because I was taking half an hour out of my class every day, but they would say, can we do this all day? And suddenly they come alive. So I think we underestimate what goes on in these young lives. There is a way of capturing that life again and expanding their capabilities.
Do you think every teacher can do that, or do you think teachers are jaded and just teach like they've always taught?
We can do that because we have a platform that will capture those kind of conversations and lead them. So that's the key difference to what we have. It's an impossible task to do that in a classroom situation, because they've got to have outcomes that, you know, are set and they're responsible. Yeah. In our setting, the platform that we created is designed for that environment where the kids can explore. We capture that in the platform. We're working on automation of how that is reported. So you get a report at the end of that if you want it. And a lot of that work's going to be done automatically through internal automation. So we can follow the kids a lot more in that way.
When you're going into the schools, I would have imagined that the teachers and the principals would be resistant to an outsider coming in. But you're suggesting that you can get into the schools and spend time with children.
I've done that to a degree, and you're absolutely right. There is a resistance, but the resistance is, that's just another thing to add to the day.
Yeah.
I mean, and they've got so much to get through, and they're teaching, you know, they've got to have outcomes and they've got to have results in what they are producing for the children. What we're offering them is, hey, let them play, let them explore. We can capture that learning, and it will complement what's happening, especially for those kids that are unengaged. Kids that are unengaged continue being unengaged until somehow we find a way to make them engaged.
Many of our listeners are homeschooling. How can you help them?
We offer the New Zealand curriculum as a tool to navigate their learning. So it could be just a traditional approach to learning with the New Zealand curriculum, or it could be what we do, allow them to follow the curiosity, and then we help them through the disciplines of the curriculum. That could be here at the Learning Hub at CSC, or it could be online. I've actually done a lot of that work, so they can contact me. We work with them, and what are they trying to.
So it'd be a good idea, and your webpage is curiousminds.ac.nz.
Yep.
And so anyone listening, because you might be homeschooling and think, well, I need a bit of oomph and a bit of help, you could do an hour or two a week with a group of homeschool kids too, right?
Yeah, I do. And I've done that, Rodney. I did about a year ago, I reached out throughout all of New Zealand, and we had some amazing homeschoolers, and most of them were getting more to senior level because they needed some more expansion and engagement. And I think that's where the benefits were. Every week we got together and says, hey, what are you learning? What are you doing? We took them through a course of inquiry. So they all studied something of interest to them. And then we would come around and have those conversations, and then we'd set it against the curriculum.
And you're homeschooling your twins?
Yeah. I am doing all this and homeschooling them.
Have you always homeschooled them?
No. They had 2.5 years at school, and it was a really difficult journey for them, just maybe personalities and situations. So they went to school again in term one of this year, and I gave them both the option of staying at school or coming back to the homeschool, and they both chose to come back to the homeschool, and they're really happy. It really fits them well.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The homeschool movement is growing very fast, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. really big. There was a massive explosion in the more recent years.
Post-COVID.
Yeah.
I know that's what got me going, A, because I saw how the teacher was interacting with the kids because they were doing those Zoom classrooms.
Mm.
And then the kids wanted it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think, again, I always come back, I think we really underestimate our children in navigating their own life. I really, really do. And our expectation is that we think they need all these things around them, but in actual fact, what we need to do is just let them have a voice and to have those conversations with us, and they've always blown me away. And I think that's one of the reasons why I do what I do today, because when I make time for them, and I give them a platform to share who they are as a human being, it's like, oh, my gosh, what are we missing? You know?
Oh, you're inspiring. How inspiring is that? It's very inspiring. We're talking to Tala Voss, Hybrid Learning Community Hub. You can read all about it at curiousminds.ac.nz. I've been online while I've been talking. It's very fascinating, particularly if you've got kids and you're interested in how best to school them. It's a big opportunity there with this hub to give help to kids who are at school and to give help to kids that are being homeschooled. What do you say, Tala? Is that true?
Yeah, that's really good, Rodney. it's a fabulous journey.
I wish you every success.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming on our show.
That's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. That was Tala Voss from the Hybrid Learning Community Hub.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.